open the House Committee on Environment and Water and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 76A and welcome Representative Girard to testify on the bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I am State Representative Bill Girard, House District 56, Southern Klamath County, the only district in this state that will be 100% impacted by this bill. Senate Bill 76 is the most political bill that will probably come before you this session. You are receiving a copy of a CDM study and a copy of the agreement in principle, which are two key documents involved in the Senate Bill 76, and I will be referring to them upon occasion. If this were the 2011 session, I might be sitting here asking you to pass this bill. But timing is everything. And the timing of this bill is just plain bad and will make for bad policy simply to give, in my opinion, the governor of the state an environmental bill on which to base his legacy. The ratepayers of Pacific Corps throughout the state will be paying for it. Every one of our districts have ratepayers that will be paying for this dam removal. And they will be getting nothing in return except escalating power bills, which could wind up over decades. I said earlier that the timing of this bill couldn't be worse. It makes no sense to me to approve the removal of these dams before you do the feasibility study that will determine whether removal of the dams will even bring the desired results. But then I find out, red flags flying, that there have already been two feasibility studies completed, both of which indicate that the environmental damage that could be caused by the removal of these dams, which include a potential for flooding, along with the cost of sediment removal, could reach as high as $4.5 billion. Several lawsuits have already been filed as to the environmental impacts and water quality problems that will happen after dam removal. What the proponents of this bill have not been talking about is the potential for the liability of environmental needs. And they are not addressed in this bill, but they are addressed in some of the documentation now before you. And, of course, we know who's going to pay for it, whether it's taxpayers or ratepayers. But you kind of know that. We need to know the true cost of dam removal. There is a CDM study, which you have a copy of in front of you, that was completed by and for the Department of the Interior through the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation.
Sorry, and Representative, is that, we have a...
Yes, that's the executive summary of that.
Thank you.
If you wanted the entire bill for your evening reading, I would have. And if you would like copies of the entire thing, I certainly
several.
Go into the printing business and get them for you. Please note on page 2 of that document, it says liability identification and costing. Quote, liability costs fall into two categories, direct and indirect costs. Many of the indirect costs remain unqualified. And that's part of the point that we're trying to make today. On page 4, total of quantifiable liabilities lies between $465 million and $836 million. Yet the bill before you says $450 million is going to pay for everything. On page 5, paragraph 4, there is, quote, again, a high potential for litigation with a dam removal program that proposes to pass large volumes of sediment due to the damage to downstream fisheries and aquatic systems. We could even be looking at the EPA somewhere down the line designating this as a Superfund area. And the FERC study done by the Army Corps of Engineers also indicates a high risk of environmental liability. The Sierra Club has just filed a lawsuit against dam removal. I might add that's one of three that have already been filed, and I suspect there will be more. And now the governor has ordered another $4 million in federal stimulus money to pay for yet another study of the feasibility of removing these dams. Why are we getting three studies? Because the first two haven't come out the way they wanted them to. But stimulus money for a feasibility study? You are being asked to approve removal of these dams and ratepayers to pay for it before we even know if dam removal will achieve its goals. So why are we trying to push this bill so hard? On its face, Senate Bill 76 asks you to decide whether to authorize a $200 million rate increase on Pacific Corps customers. What set Senate Bill 76 apart is that our decision on Senate Bill 76 will also be a decision on the merits of the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, the agreement in principle, which you have before you. This is an agreement that was reached and signed in November of last year, signed by the governors of Oregon and California, the Interior Department, and Pacific Corps. The meetings to develop the agreement in principle and the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, and I'm making reference here to the Restoration Agreement, were not held in public meetings. Only selected people were invited to attend the meetings. And by the way, just yesterday, I've just been informed they issued their 12th final draft. So that's still a work in progress. By voting for this bill, you will be expressing your support for a final resolution agreement that really is not yet in final form and which we have not been privy to. You will also be making a decision on whether or how the Klamath Basin water rights adjudication process should proceed, because the restoration agreement trumps water adjudication. So what about the water adjudicated rights of individuals? Water adjudication of the Klamath Basin has been going on since 1909. Ain't hard to figure out, that's 100 years. All of that would be pushed aside if the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement goes forward. And it will go forward if you approve dam removal. With all due respect, I do not think the members of this body, myself included, are presently qualified to render a decision on the merits of the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, an agreement that is not yet in final form. I do not think many of us have fully reviewed the federal reports assessing the liability associated with the dam removal. I do not think that we are presently qualified to express support or disapproval upon that final agreement, which has not yet been drafted. Few of us, I suspect, have a sufficient basis of information to determine whether or how the Klamath Basin adjudication process should proceed. If these propositions are largely correct, I would respectfully submit that it is irresponsible for us to render a decision on Senate Bill 76 at the present time. Yet that's exactly what the proponents of this bill want you to do. My suggestion that Senate Bill 76 is so linked to the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, the Klamath Basin Adjudication, the agreement in principle, and the final agreement, and the federal liability assessments, They're all viable facts. One move starts all, and that move is dam removal. An agreement in principle is referenced in the document that you have before you in the first sentence of the AM Gross Bill 76 and defined in Section 2. The final agreement is referenced again in Line 6 of the bill. The agreement in principle makes explicit and repeated reference to both the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and the Klamath Basin Adjudication Process. The Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement directly impacts the adjudication. Many other references and cross-references in identifying may or may not seem significant, but rather simply the most obvious and easiest to use for purpose of illustration. My point is simple. Approval of Senate Bill 76 lends this body's support to all of this, to the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, the agreement in principle, the final agreement, and it implies that you, this committee, are familiar with the federal liability studies that have been deliberated upon. You're also making a decision that will ultimately affect the water adjudication. We've already spent millions of dollars on keeping the adjudication process going. It's almost completed. But again, the restoration agreement trumps water adjudication. My suggestion is not that this body should avoid rendering a decision on each of the issues that I've just identified. My suggestion is that further deliberation is warranted and that decisions on these issues should be made in 2010 or 2011, but not in 2009. In this regard, I would remind you that $4 million in federal stimulus money is now going to be used to fund a dam removal feasibility study again. It seems somewhat rash for this body to render a decision on Senate Bill 76 without waiting for a feasibility study, the third one, to be completed. It's kind of like putting the cart really in front of the horse. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what you have before you is a bill that will authorize the largest dam removal in the history of the United States. And excluding World War II, it would be the largest dam removal in the history of the world, the planet. That's how serious, that's how big this thing is. If you vote to move this bill forward, you will give perhaps the tribe their salmon, but nobody knows that for sure. You may give irrigators water flow they can depend on. That's the good part of this bill, that it might achieve that until the next endangered species is selected in the basin and we go through this process again. And you may give the governor his legacy on environmental acts. But what you will give is the ratepayers of Oregon, who get nothing out of this bill. There are no benefits for the ratepayers. The irrigators get the water. The tribes may get salmon. But there's nothing there for the people. And I can assure you the majority of the people in my district, according to my letters, emails, telephones, etc., oppose this dam removal. So I ask you, who do you represent? Each of you represent the people of your district, and that's what I'm doing here today. This is my district, and I know my people, and I know that a majority oppose dam removal. There is too much environmental liability with an undetermined cost. You have the problem of water adjudication rights, all reasons to take a serious look at slowing this thing down. But the biggest reason of all, and please remember this, because there are proposed amendments, but they don't address the most serious problem with this bill, and that is timing. I ask you, please wait until we know if dam removal is the right thing to do. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Girard. Before you get up, let me just ask about the linkage, and I think we'll get additional testimony about
this. If I'm capable of answering, Mr. Chair, I will.
I think it's a pretty basic question. If we pass this bill into law, the final agreement doesn't appear and take effect. I mean, in other words, there's still an opportunity for the signatories to the agreement in principle and what would be a final agreement to say we're leaving the table for whatever reason. I want to make sure that you've drawn a connection between the two and said that passing this bill would be tantamount to endorsing this agreement in principle and presumably final agreement that would result. But it's not as if the passage of this bill means a final agreement takes effect. There are a lot of signatories to that who could decide to be part of it or not.
The four people, or the four entities that are in the agreement in principle are the two states of California, the state of California, state of Oregon, the Interior Department, and Pacific Corps. Those are the four people involved. There will be the agreement in principle to go forward must be signed by June 30th. To be signed by June 30th, I'm suspecting that the state of Oregon would like to present that they have this in place. I know that Pacific Corps must put the rates into effect immediately to amortize them over a till 2020 when the dams are supposed to be removed, so that the bill is paid, so to speak. It's also interesting that while Oregon ratepayers will be paying for most of this out of their pockets, California's going to use a $250 million bond to pay their share. And I would also toss in the fact that Siskiyou County, the northernmost county in California, their commissioners are opposed to dam removal, and our own Klamath County commissioners have not taken a position on dam removal because of the questions that I have raised before you today. To directly respond to your question, yes, I believe that there are no further impediments to signing the June 30th agreement if you pass this bill and we pass this bill on the floor.
Thank you very much, Representative Girard. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And even though we're not voting today, I do want the record to reflect the fact that I have a conflict in that I have represented numerous claimants in the adjudication activity in the Klamath, and some of those files still remain open today. Representative Girard, you and I have discussed these issues at some length, and it would be interesting if you could share with us your thinking on what would happen if this settlement agreement does not happen. Maybe you could give us your vision of the future for your district if the settlement agreement does not happen. And I don't want to go to the easy solution, which is wait for the feasibility agreement. I want to go beyond that and say the agreement just falls apart. Can you kind of tell us what you think would happen next?
Well, yes, the agreement would probably fall apart. I don't think you'd be able to get all of the various shareholders that are involved in the restoration agreement to sit down at a table and do this again. I don't think that would happen. And to the detriment of some of the on-project irrigators, it would mean that the whole basin goes back to worrying about the bucket brigade and having enough water and cutting off water, etc. So we go back, we revert back to 8 years ago and those problems that we had when the government first cut off water to our irrigators. However, not all of our irrigators are on board with this. Some are, some aren't. But again, unless you're an irrigator, a member of the tribe, you don't benefit from this. But there is an overriding question, which you have thoughtfully brought to mind, that scares, I think should scare every resident of Klamath County, and that is ultimately the future of agriculture in the Klamath Basin. But there are many of us who feel that the answer for water in the basin lies in storing the water. And there are many folks that are working on exactly that proposition of finding an area, and areas have been selected where proper water storage could be made to then call upon for irrigation purposes. So I would suspect we'd probably fall back to that particular position and kind of start all over again. Yes. I hope I answered your question as best I could.
Representative. Just a follow-up remark. Well, it's a complicated situation, to understate it greatly. And so I'm sure others will share with us what they think will happen if the settlement agreement. And I was just wanted to have you have that chance.
It's a very good question.
Thank you.
And
thank
I did
you.
Not want to answer it.
Representative Smith.
So enough people have visited my office to know that I'm supposed to be for this. And I don't know if I am. And I'm really glad we're having a hearing, because maybe that's what they're for. And I have a bunch of questions, and a smart person suggested that maybe I throw them out early so that other people can respond to them to the extent they are germane to their area of expertise, and they might know that germanity more than I. Some of the questions I'm thinking about, why do we want it, why don't we want it? I imagine lots of people will be speaking to both of those questions, and you did, and I appreciate that. Also, what are better process options? Representative Bentz's question was really helpful. Is this the legislature's last chance to address the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement? Is this an irrevocable act? Is a question I have that you might touch on. Maybe you already did. If we choose another process option, does that kill the agreement forever? You already covered that to some degree, but somebody else addressing that would be helpful later. So the last question, and the really only question I definitely want to pose to you, is can we imagine any sideboards, any potential amendments, anything to this that alleviate any of our concerns and maybe that's a silly question, but or is this just going to be a strict up or down binary choice, yay, go, no, no, go?
I'm kind of hoping that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping we can just shelve this. Just say we need to know what the outcomes are projected to be before we authorize the beginning of the entire process. So I think I would be very happy if we could delay this till the next session and take it up then. And we'd be able then to, again, assess the third federal study, feasibility study, and perhaps that'll give us a better direction.
Thank you so much, Representative Card.
Thank you.
Let's hear next from Mike Carrier and Paul Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With your permission, I'll go first. For the record, my name is Michael Carrier, Governor Kulongoski's Natural Resources Policy Director. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for scheduling this hearing as soon as you did after the recent funnel day. This is a very, very important bill to the governor and a number of stakeholders in the Klamath Basin and throughout Oregon. I want to carry to you the governor's strong support for Senate Bill 76 as adopted in the Senate, as well as for the Dash 13 amendments that will be presented to you if not already, very soon. Both have his full support, and he asks for your support for this bill. This bill contributes in an important way to the resolution of decades of conflict in the basin. Representative Girard talked about the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. You may well know that a year ago that agreement was announced by nearly two dozen diverse stakeholder groups after several years of negotiation. That fundamental to that restoration agreement was the assumption that another agreement would be reached for the removal of the four hydropower dams owned by and owned and operated by PacifiCorp on the Klamath River. After the announcement of the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, the governor assigned me, with the help of an attorney from the Department of Justice, to begin meetings with the company, with California, and the Department of the Interior to see if we could achieve an agreement on removal of the hydropower dams. We achieved an agreement in principle, as you know, in November of 2008, and are currently working toward filling in the details with a final agreement by June 30th of this year. Although I believe you have a copy of the agreement in principle, and you will see that it is a very, very robust document. Governor Kulongoski fully supports the removal of all four dams. He's done so for a number of years and first called for the removal of those dams during the 2006 ocean salmon fishing crisis, which was precipitated by such low returns of salmon on the Klamath that it caused a major disruption of the commercial and sport fishery on the Klamath. In subsequent years, we've seen the same thing occur as a result of the Sacramento runs, but at any given time, it can occur relative to any of the three major salmon-producing rivers in the Northwest, the Columbia, the Sacramento, and the Klamath. This bill has clear social and environmental benefits, but it's also a good business decision for the company, for its shareholders, and most importantly, for its ratepayers, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, because it does assure cost containment and price stability for its customers. The customers of PacifiCorp are going to pay more because of the Klamath dams, regardless of what happens here. There is no, as a someone said at a press conference earlier today, there is no action alternative here. These dams are under a relicensing proceeding with FERC. They must be relicensed. If they are relicensed and continue to operate, the prescriptions will be so expensive to accommodate the water quality and fish issues that the company and many of us that have looked at this, as well as others that have conducted studies to analyze this, have concluded that the cost of continuing operation of those dams with those prescriptions will only cost the ratepayers more. What this bill does is provide cost containment and certainty for the ratepayers of PacifiCorp. Your vote in support of this bill, I believe, will not only be an endorsement of a negotiated settlement of two agreements, and I think you heard, as a result of the question that Representative Bentz asked and Representative Jefferson Smith asked, that not going forward with these agreements creates greater uncertainty except for continued conflict in the basin, such as the conflict we saw in 2001. I'd like to take just a minute and address some of the points I heard in the previous testimony. The CDM study. This is one of many studies. And the studies over the years have estimated a cost of dam removal of anywhere from just under $90 million to the $400-some million number in the CDM study. The CDM study, it's very important to point out, assumed when it estimated that as the high range of costs, and it's mischaracterized as the absolute cost in the CDM study. It's the high end of a range of potential costs for dam removal. That high end assumes that before the dams were removed, all sediment would be removed behind the dams. That is not necessarily the case, and has not yet been determined. A number of the dam removal projects that have occurred in the Northwest have allowed the sediment. It's been determined the sediment is benign, and the dams have been breached and removed, and the sediment has been allowed to migrate downstream. So the CDM study is one of many. The CDM study, if it does anything, points to the importance of the provision in the agreement in principle that over the next 4 years, the Secretary of the Interior will undertake a very robust series of studies and analyses under a NEPA process to determine all the liabilities, costs, and other issues associated with dam removal, and make a determination in 2012 as to whether the dams should remain in or be removed. That's a very important component of the agreement in principle that frequently gets overlooked, that The due diligence that's talked about here is built into that through the Secretary of the Interior. I want to say something about the number of the $4 million. The governor did not, contrary to the testimony that was offered, did not ask or direct that money from the stimulus bill be used for that purpose. It came as a pleasant surprise to us. It was actually put in by the Congress, probably at the request of the Secretary of the Interior, and appropriated directly to Interior to commence the studies that are called for in the agreement in principle by the Secretary of the Interior, and to commence them sooner than we had originally expected, which is good, because we would like to get this determination made even before 2012. I know of no lawsuits, and others can correct me, but I know of no lawsuits that have been initiated over the proposal to remove the dams. There have been lawsuits initiated over the water quality problems that have occurred because of the dams. The issue of the agreement trumping adjudication of water rights, I do not believe that to be the case. The agreement principle calls for the parties to the agreement to settle rather than adjudicate out their remaining contested water rights. That's a voluntary component of the agreement among those parties. Parties who are in adjudication and not a part of this agreement will not have their adjudication trumped. It will have to be resolved either through settlement outside this agreement or through adjudication. The most important point that I want to make about this bill, relative to some of the uncertainties that were raised in the previous testimony, is that this bill is needed now not only to demonstrate Oregon's commitment to the agreement, but to soften the impact on the ratepayers. The bill calls for it provides guidance to the Public Utilities Commission relative to a cap on a rate surcharge, the duration of that rate surcharge, and how it's to be administered and how the funds are to be stewarded. And that's about all it really does. The Public Utilities Commission still retains the authority to make it a very complete record and make a determination as to whether the surcharge called for is reasonable and prudent. And that's a very important point. So if some of the what-ifs that were raised about the agreement or other issues coming up go directly to part of the determination that the Public Utilities Commission would make relative to the surcharge. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will allow my colleague, Paul Graham, to offer, a brief description of what the bill really does for you, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thanks. Good afternoon. I'm Paul Graham with the Oregon Attorney General's Office, and let me begin by saying that the Department of Justice does not have a position on this bill. I'm here to explain the legal aspects of the bill. I guess I'll start off with a little bit of background. The Public Utility Commission is a...
Got a little closer to your...
Public Utility Commission...
Can you pull it out? You can't. Don't try that. It's not going to work.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Public Utility Commission is a creature created by this legislature. Years ago, legislatures used to set rates, and it got too difficult, so legislatures around this country created Public Utility Commissions to take over the task of rate setting. Because the commission is a creature of the legislature, you can give instructions to the commission by passing legislation, and this is simply instructions to the commission with respect to the potential removal of the Klamath dams. I say potential because this legislation does not contemplate that the dams will definitely be removed. This is one of the many steps that would be taken toward potential dam removal. There are some other ones. California would need to pass a bond measure. The final agreement needs to be signed. There'll need to be federal legislation regarding liability for dam removal. And the actual decision regarding dam removal, whether it's feasible or not, will be made by the U.S. Department of Interior in 2012, and then the dams would not come out until 2020 at the earliest. So I want to emphasize that the language of the bill does not say that you're making a decision about dam removal. You're making a decision about potential dam removal. The bill deals with three cost buckets, and the first one, which is in Section 6 of the bill, is the major one. This is the one where we're talking about collecting a surcharge for removal of the dams. And the amount of money, as you've already heard, is about $200 million. It's $200 million from California and Oregon. And of that, the best estimate right now is that Oregon would bear about $184 million and California the remainder. And you may wonder why the disparity, and the disparity is because California has only about 46,000 Pacific Corps ratepayers, and Oregon has 500,000 to 600,000. And then California, of course, will be, assuming its bond measure passes, contributing $250 million, and Oregon will not have a bond measure.
This is Section 4 of the bill.
Yes. Yes, I think I may have said Section 6. Thank you for correcting me to Section 4 of the bill. The idea is that the commission would start collecting the money in 2010. Why 2010? If the commission has to wait, I think the proponents of the bill are concerned that customers would have to pay more money because the surcharge would be collected over maybe 8 years instead of 10 years. So that's the reason, I think, why the bill says that the surcharges are supposed to begin now. If the dams are not going to come out, and there's a provision in the law that says if any of the dams don't come out, then the surcharges are returned to the customers or otherwise used for customers' benefit. The second cost bucket we're talking about is recovery of investment, and this is something that happens in all rate cases. Investment is always returned to the utility through depreciation expense. We estimate a life for every resource, and maybe a 30-year life, 40-year life, 50-year life, and return the investment on a straight-line basis over the life of the resource. What would be different here is that if the dams are going to come out in 2020, we would have an accelerated depreciation schedule. So the dams would not come out years and years and years from now, but they would come out on the projected date of 2020, so there would be about 10 years to collect the remaining investment and return that to the utility. However, the law does provide that if facts change and the dams are not going to come out as soon as possible, then the commission can extend the amortization schedule. And then the third one has to do with power cost. It is in Section 6 of the bill, and it deals with power costs that may go up or down as a result of the removal of the dams. I think Mike Carrier has already told you that there would be some new investment necessary in the dams. I think it's about $200 to $300 million. You can probably get better numbers from Pacific Corps. Customers would be responsible for that. The dams would not produce as much power if they're relicensed. And so the choice we're really making, and I think the legislation reflects this, is the choice between not the dams as they exist today, but rather the dams as relicensed versus a company with no dams in this area. And what the commission would do is to run power cost models that would determine the difference between Pacific Corps with the dams as relicensed versus Pacific Corps without the dams. That would be the inquiry. There are three other features of the bill that I want to talk about, and one is a feature that doesn't appear in the bill. Anytime the commission deals with a cost, it has to allocate the cost between the customer classes, and by customer classes I mean the residential customers, the commercial customers, and the industrial customers. In the AIP, we had some language in that was going to give the commission some instructions as to how it would handle that allocation. We decided to take that out. That language will not be in the final agreement. It's not in the bill. So the commission will simply decide in the normal course of its deliberations how to allocate the cost fairly between the residential, commercial, and industrial customers. I also want to point out that there's some amendments. They're the Dash 14 amendments. These are amendments that were worked out in a meeting that involved Mr. Carrier and me. There were representatives of Pacific Corps and representatives of the industrial customers of Northwest Utilities. Those are the Dash, or the A14 amendments. And what these amendments do is to define what we mean by dam removal so there's no confusion about what dam removal costs include and do not include. And then I also want to note one other feature of the bill. You'll note that the dam removal costs do not include decommissioning. Decommissioning is a term of art in rate making. It is the physical removal of the dams, the physical disconnection of the dams from Pacific Coast system.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Something is causing a lot of noise on the line. I don't know if somebody has something, some electronic equipment on or what it might be, but it's very difficult for me to hear it this way, and I think I'm getting a sign language from staff that it's interfering over there. So if anyone does have anything, that could we ask them to...
Yeah, it's a reminder. I should be in the habit of giving to turn off, not just mute, but actually turn off the communication devices, and those BlackBerries are particularly troublesome, so please do shut those off.
Thank you.
That sound is someone's mobile device, so let's see them out and off. Go ahead.
I was discussing decommissioning. It is not a dam removal cost. It's dealt with in Section 3 of the bill. It is part of the return of the capital. So I wanted to make that point clear. And the decommissioning, again, is the physical disconnection of the dams from Pacific Coast system and salvage value. So that little piece of the dam removal costs, if we are going to remove the dams, would be dealt with under Section 3 of the bill.
Let's see if there are any questions from members of the committee. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It might be worthwhile to explain again the cost of leaving the dams in, because I'm interested in that number. And if I recall correctly from my days of service on the Fish Passage Task Force, there are considerable amounts of cost that the company would incur. I think you mentioned something around $200 million, $300 million. And I am interested in also, if you leave the dams in, what sort of difference we might see in the flow of water through the dams as a result of these new fish passage devices that would have to be installed as a condition of relicensing.
I think I'll refer the second part of your question to an expert on fish. I can talk about the rate-making aspects of it. The commission, by the way, will be making a decision as to whether or not this is beneficial to ratepayers to take the dams out or leave the dams in. I can tell you, however, that...
Mr. Chair, I can just barely hear you. If you can get closer to the microphone.
Okay. I can tell you, however, that there will be some additional costs from leaving the dams in, because if the dams are going to be relicensed, there will be necessary additional investment. The figure I've heard is about $200 to $300 million. Customers would be paying a return of that capital and a return on that capital, and the dams would not produce as much cheap power as they do now. So there will be additional costs, and again, I wouldn't want to sit here and tell you today whether or not customers will necessarily be better off with or without the dams, because I think the bill provides that the commission is to make that call, but we know that it's not... It's not black and white. There will be costs from relicensed dams.
Follow up. Shift now to your maybe something a little more in your area. But the document is called an agreement in principle. So why does it just say agreement?
Because it was designed to be a precursor for the final agreement. And why it was done this way, I'm going to ask Mike Carey to answer that question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, boy, you're taxing my memory, because it was exactly a year ago today, I think, that we had our first meeting with the company and decided that we would start negotiating an agreement in principle. And at that time, we assumed that our discussions, which was a smaller group of the company, Interior, California, and Oregon, would get to a basic agreement that called for hydro removal, that it would be a skeleton agreement, and then we would expand the discussion to other parties and complete a more robust final agreement based on that. What we ended up with by November was something we continue to call an agreement in principle, something that needed a few more details filled in, but something that was much more robust and detailed than we had anticipated in May.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Hello.
Thank you. I guess my question, of course, is do we really have an agreement? Is it complete now? What is it that we're looking at when we talk about the, quote, agreement in principle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, I'm not sure I clearly understand the question. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to review the agreement in principle, but there are blanks, there are placeholders, there are provisions that call for more detail. So we are working on those. We are also reviewing, because we have a new administration that has embraced this agreement in principle more fully and with even stronger commitment than the previous administration, we're going back with them and reviewing other provisions, particularly with regard to the federal role in this, in the agreement in principle. Beyond that, we are committed in these discussions to confidentiality and not disclosing the nature or details related to those discussions. So I apologize. I'm unable to disclose the specifics, but that's what we're doing.
Mr. Chair, follow up. I have read the agreement, and what I was trying to get to is a statement, as clearly as we can hear it today, of how much reliance, if any, we should put on the agreement in principle, and what portions of it are reliable and what portions are not, and how much attention should we pay to it for purposes of making the decision we're being asked to make in this legislation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, thank you. Now I understand the question clearly. The agreement in principle is, in my opinion, still a very solid foundation for what will be the final agreement without significant changes in the principles of this agreement.
Thank you.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you.
And as a committee, as you can imagine, we have a number of other folks signed up to testify, so this is a complex and important issue. We'll also need to be sensitive to time. Go ahead.
With that, Mr. Chair, I'll keep it short. Agreement in principle aside, I heard you reference the California bond issue. To what extent are we dependent on actions in California and passage of a bond, and what happens if that doesn't come to pass?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, the great thing about this is the agreement calls for removal of the dams in 2020, beginning in 2020. It calls for the Secretary to make a final determination and then to consult with the governors about that determination and seek their concurrence in 2012. That gives California ample time to work through their current fiscal crisis and put out legislation that refers a bond measure to the voters. It's our understanding, and then their bill's already introduced in the California legislature, which is a full-time legislature, that would provide for this, but they're not moving those. Obviously, they've got other issues they're dealing with right now. But it is our understanding that with regard to general obligation bonds, they have a very robust agenda regarding water development, other water development needs, especially in the Central Valley, that they would tie this particular bond measure to. If they fail to enact a bond measure, the agreement provides for the parties to step back and consult about what to do next. California could opt out of the agreement, and the agreement would essentially be extinguished at that point. So there are a number of options. There are provisions in the agreement principle, and we'll be in the final agreement for what to do with those eventualities. You know, ultimately, we really don't know until the Secretary makes the final determination what the best cost estimate of dam removal is. I've mentioned before that earlier estimates were as low as under $90 million and high-end estimates around $400 million. We think that there is still potential for the $200 million proposed as a rate surcharge could be adequate to do the job.
Thank you. And I expect that you will make yourself available to us if we have, as we have additional questions on this issue, Mr. Carrier. Thank you. Thank you very much. And with that, I will ask Glenn Spain. And do we have Chair Joseph Kirk here? No. Glenn Spain, Steve Kandra, and Carl Scruntz.
Thank you.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'll defer to the chairman here.
Very good.
As the first speaker.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 76 on behalf of the Klamath Tribes. As Tribal Council Chairman for the Klamath Tribes...
Identify yourself for the record, sir. Pardon? Please identify yourself for the record.
Oh, excuse me. My name is Joe Kirk. I'm Chairman of the Klamath Tribes.
Thank you.
I want to share with you a few thoughts regarding Senate Bill 76 and the ongoing settlement efforts that have produced the bill. The Klamath Tribe signed a treaty with the United States in 1864. The treaty guaranteed in perpetuity a homeland and the right to hunt, fish, gather within that homeland. In 1917, the first hydroelectric dam was built on the Klamath River without fish ladders. Our salmon and steelhead were eliminated. Since then, more hydroelectric dams have been built. As time marched on, the damage being done by the dams on the river and the fisheries has worsened. I have heard opponents of dam removal express concern about losing green, cheap hydroelectric power. If the Klamath dams are removed, losing hydroelectric power if the Klamath dams are removed. Let's dispense with the notion that those dams are green at the onset. They block access by salmon and steelhead to many miles of badly needed habitat. They impair the water quality, water temperature, and habitat in ways that cause serious problems for salmon, steelhead, and the reservoirs pose a serious risk to both fish and people. How cheap is the power? For the entire history of the dams, that question has been answered solely in terms of monetary cost to ratepayers, never to the cost of tribal and non-tribal fishing communities have been considered those costs, and they have been enormous. None of these considerations of costs of the Klamath dams have reached ratepayers explicitly, although both ratepayers and taxpayers have recently begun to feel the impacts of costs associated with the efforts to relicense the Klamath Hydroelectric Project, and they have been growing over the past decade. Costs that are passed on to ratepayers if relicensing continues on its present course, the cost to the ratepayers is going to be very large. Costs incurred by PacifiCorps will be passed on to the ratepayers, and those costs are certain to exceed the $200 million cap that Senate Bill 76 proposes. Make no mistake, Senate Bill 76 is a good deal for the ratepayers. Senate Bill 76 is the first step in a larger approach to settling long-standing, complex, and divisive issues in the Klamath Basin, and therefore... the first formal opportunity for Oregon state government to begin the process of implementing the collaborative solutions that have been developed by the people who live in the Klamath Basin. So what kind of a settlement has been developed in the Klamath? In the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, a large group of former combatants have come together and accomplished an amazing feat. The tribes, environmental groups, farmers, ranchers, working with local, state, and federal governments, found a way to share a scarce water supply, restore fisheries, fix impaired rivers, address energy issues, and assist tribal economies. The Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement isn't a perfect work, and work needs to be done, and some groups have yet to be drawn into the fold. But the fact is that a large coalition of groups have decided to pursue a future collaboration and working together instead of warfare. In conclusion, Senate Bill 76 will cap costs to ratepayers at a reasonable level It is part of a comprehensive approach, collaboratively resolving serious conflicts on several fronts. Indeed, a clear understanding of the issues of the Klamath Basin lead to the conclusion that the surest way to ensure economic and environmental disaster is to kill Senate Bill 76 and the associated settlement efforts. This has been an issue that has been going on all of my life, and it has continually gotten worse. The worst thing we can do is to do nothing. And this is the first time, and again, I'm kind of an old guy, this is the first time the membership of the Klamath Basin and the Klamath River have pulled together to put together a realistic solution to an ongoing problem. I urge you to support Senate Bill 76, and I thank you for this opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for being here today. I'm going to put the timer on now and ask that we limit testimony to just 3 minutes, and I'll let you know when that time's up and ask you to summarize then. So we have extensive written comments, I think, from other members of this panel, and we'll take the time to look at those if you'll promise to be brief in your oral remarks today.
I'll do my best. My name is Glenn Spain, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I do have extensive written comments, which are more detailed, but I will hit the high points. I am the Northwest Regional Director for the largest trade association of commercial fishermen and fishing families on the West Coast. The Klamath has been an ongoing disaster for coastal communities all the way up to Washington and all the way down to Southern California for many years. The losses that have resulted from the bisection of one of the greatest salmon-producing rivers, the third largest in the country, and the loss of all of those because of the dams has been astronomical in terms of the cost. So we are certainly advocates of dam removal. However, I want to point out what SB 76 is not. It is not a vote on dam removal. That decision will be made at the by the Secretary of Interior in 2012 on the basis of extensive studies which have been ongoing for years. The CDM study is one of maybe three dozen studies out there that either are finished or in process or will be completed soon. There's an extensive public and NEPA process, extensive process in both states for public input. That decision is not this bill. That also has nothing to do with the other settlement agreements in the basin, which are trying to achieve resolution of intractable issues on other issues. It has only to do with ratepayers and ratepayer obligations for a clear problem that is a clear liability facing the Pacific Corsair Company. There is no middle ground. One of two things, and only two things, will happen. Either the dams will be relicensed at tremendous cost, and FERC itself has determined that after those costs are spent, the dams will not be cost-effective. They will actually lose money. It will cost more to fix them up to modern standards than they are worth. Or there will be a settlement agreement with the company and FERC and other parties, and they will be removed as apparently the least cost and most effective option, as well as the most environmentally beneficial option for communities downriver and communities upriver like the tribes. All this does is essentially do what any wise budget does. They set aside a savings fund, a sinking fund, if you will, over time, gradually, over the next 11 years, to pay for what we know are going to be large costs either way. But there is no free lunch. There will be costs. It behooves the ratepayers and it behooves the citizens of the state to start 11 years early and setting that aside so that the total impact is roughly $1.50 to $1.80 a month per ratepayer, rather than wait for two, four, how many more years, and have all of that hit the ratepayers all at once years down the road. So that's what it does, essentially nothing more and nothing less.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How about you? You're closer to the mic.
Thank you very much for letting me testify. My name is Carl Srantz. I'm a farmer in the Klamath Basin area, and I support Senate Bill 76. I'm a farmer that's been there for, I'm a third-generation farmer. I have farmed in most areas in the Klamath Basin. I'm familiar with being farming in the federal project. I'm familiar with farming outside of the federal project. Right at the moment, the land that I farm is rented land outside of the federal project, and so coined off-project. I'm president of the Upper Klamath Water Users Association. It's a group of people that formed an alliance that to work within the settlement agreement, be proactive in participating in a Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. We had three goals in mind, and one is water assurances for irrigation. That would be taken place by working with Klamath tribes and also Klamath Water Users Association as other participants in the Klamath Settlement Group. Number two is to participate in an affordable power rate for farmers. This power rate would not be a subsidy to ag power, but it would be a jump start on gaining emission renewable energy, whether, you know, whatever that could might be, whether it be geothermal projects, solar projects, what you name it. And number three, our objective is to have protections from regulation. Examples would be protections from Endangered Species Act, Clean Water Act, and now carbon as a pollutant. And so we look at the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement as a means to achieve those three goals, which that's the larger picture that we pursue. See, I've suffered from two water shutoffs in my farming career. One in, I believe, in 1992, minor shutoff, and then the bigger shutoff in the federal project in 2001. And I'll tell you what, it's a game-changing event to have happen in your career. Water is essential to the irrigation in Klamath Basin. You have to have water to farm and in Klamath Basin. It's not like dry land areas, which I've become very familiar with, being a part of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. So I encourage your support for Senate Bill 76. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Cannon, members of the committee. My name is Steve Kander, and I'm past president and current board member of the Klamath Water Users Association. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony regarding Senate Bill 76. Klamath Water Users is a nonprofit corporation that has represented Klamath Reclamation Project farmers and ranchers since 1953. Our members are irrigators and irrigation districts who contract with the Federal Bureau of Reclamation to supply water for their family farming operations. Klamath Water Users Association members include rural and suburban irrigation districts and other public entities such as drainage districts, improvement districts, and so forth, as well as private individuals who operate on both sides of the California and Oregon border. We represent over 1,200 family farms and ranches that encompass over 170,000 acres with what I consider to be some of the best farmland in the West, and for your information, that is in Mr. Garrard's district. These individual lands that have been at the heart of some of the most contentious and difficult conflicts that the modern West has seen. Klamath Water Users supports the legislation. It is essential to stabilizing our Klamath Basin communities and moving beyond the strife that has characterized this watershed for far too long. It is critical to understand, however, that this particular piece of legislation and the funding stream it would authorize cannot be considered in isolation. Klamath Water Users and others view this legislation as one very specific element of a much larger activity resulted in a carefully balanced package of compromise and commitment known as the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. And here's where I'm going to get into trouble, because I'm going to go off script a little bit. I heard some stuff here early that it trumps adjudication. I have served on irrigation districts in Oregon and California for the past 24 years and been involved in this adjudication from its very beginning. I am not a lawyer, but I will tell you that this particular the restoration agreement does not trump, but it provides what I call incentives for people to what I call settle their adjudication claims and contests with other benefit. Agriculture is a large ratepayer to PacifiCorp. To me, it is a good business deal to limit my liability and costs for electrical power. I am directly and indirectly responsible for almost 15 megawatts of power consumption and pay. I am very concerned about what the power rate is. I am not to unnecessarily going to raise my own rates. The future of agriculture, my kids left the farm because they were growing up in the 1990s when I suffered through 3 water shutoffs, and in 2001 they did not come home. And so I'm looking at what I call the health and stability of my communities. Our communities need stability, and the stability that will come with what we call the restoration agreement, which Senate Bill 76 is a component of. And I'd like to address what I would call the idea of storage. The storage question is still out.
Summarize in conclusion. Okay. Thank you.
Your reclamation will be coming out with an assessment on specific programs very soon. Know that Klamath Lake did not fill this year, and so there is no water to put in storage this year to save for future use. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Let's see if there are questions for any of these pieces. Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Metzger, do you want to tell us about a proposed amendment? And we still have a number of folks also waiting to testify. We haven't yet heard from Pacific Power.
I've been watching your hearing, Mr. Chair.
Very good.
So I'm up to date.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26. And I'm going to address specifically a Dash A9 amendment, which the committee has, and I hope the members have as well. I'm going to keep my comments regarding one issue, and that is ratepayer liability, ratepayer protection, not only any of the other issues that you've heard about. I voted against this bill in the Senate, not because I disagree with the principle, because I do agree with it, and I'm very hopeful I'll be able to vote for it when it comes back for concurrence, because I believe it is moving in the right direction, as lots of the testimony that you have heard today. But I also believe that in doing so, in executing Senate Bill 76 and moving forward, is keeping in mind the protection of the ratepayers. That has been, since I've been doing utility legislation, co-carried with Senator Beyer back in 1999, Senate Bill 1149, and all the way through as chair of the business committee, has chaired all the issues regarding the Public Utility Commission and utilities. And so my sole focus, as you know, Senate Bill 408, again, and then 2005, to protect ratepayers, to make sure that when we pay, you know, taxes, that they actually go to the taxing entities. And that has been my sole focus on Senate Bill 76. The agreement in principle that you have heard about, which Senate Bill 76 does, Senate Bill 76, as you have heard, does not execute the agreement in principle. It is simply a component of the agreement in principle, which establishes out the agreement in principle on pages 7, 8, and 9, talks about the customer responsibility, the state responsibility of Oregon and California to fund the agreement in principle of up to $200 million and the apportionate share between Oregon and California. And that $200 million limit, and as you have heard, most of that would be paid by Oregon ratepayers. The agreement in principle simply directs the California Public Utility Commission and the Oregon Public Utility Commission to collect those costs from the ratepayers. So starting from that point, what Senate Bill A9 does is say, as we move forward, we're making a priority decision, just as all of us are making in this legislative session, of what that priority is. As written before you, the amended version of Senate Bill 76 establishes an additional surcharge on the ratepayers of PacifiCorps in order to collect for this conservation effort, this public purpose. As you know, and all of us, or most of us, unless you are with a different electric provider, already pay a public purpose charge, which we initiated in the bill that came out of my committee in 1999, the public purpose charge, which is collected by the ratepayers of PacifiCorps, among others. The amendment to A9 establishes a basic principle, and that is, if we have established at this legislature that our responsibility and the ratepayers' responsibility, in this case PacifiCorps, for the removal of these dams, if that is our primary conservation effort, then we should take those surcharges that are already being assessed against those ratepayers and make that our priority, rather than layer an additional surcharge on the customers of PacifiCorps. And what the A-89 amendment does is direct the Public Utility Commission to collect the existing public purpose charge, which goes to, among other things, the Energy Trust of Oregon. You've heard a lot about that. And simply takes that money that the ratepayers are already being surcharged for and place it into this fund to meet the obligations of the bill up to the Oregon contribution of what is estimated to be $180 million. Rather than charging the ratepayers twice for these conservation efforts. And once this fund is set as established by the agreement in principle, the Oregon chair, then that public purpose, that surcharge, would go back to its original other conservation efforts. I just believe, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, to add an additional surcharge without prioritizing the conservation efforts that we are embodying in Senate Bill 76 is not the proper thing to do, and that we should make that priority, that this is a priority, use the existing surcharge to pay for this rather than ask the customers to pay additional money when we have made a decision, or if we do make the decision, that this is an important factor to go forward in conservation, to use that surcharge and divert it to the purposes of Senate Bill 76 before we ask for additional monies from ratepayers. That's the substance of the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And thanks, Senator Metzger, for your testimony. I have a lot of questions, but I'll just pick a few. From your testimony, if we adopted that amendment, would we be using the entire existing conservation surcharge for this? So I think from your testimony, I understood yes. If so, in addition to the Energy Trust, What are the other big ones? I mean, if there's maybe some little ones, you know, that don't matter quite as much, what are the things we'd be prioritizing below this project?
Well, one of the interesting things about this is the PUC would decide how they want to structure that surcharge, just as they are under this current amended version, are going to determine a rate schedule and how much in a given year that they would collect from ratepayers. So, for example, the current monies that PacifiCorp customers are paying, if you look at the 10-year life of this bill for collecting this surcharge, the current amount of monies that are already being surcharged by PacifiCorp customers on a 10-year basis are actually more than would have to be put into this. In other words, it wouldn't have to even if you wanted to fill it up, exactly as the PUC would probably institute a rate surcharge now to get to that $180 million, if that's approximately $20 million a year over the 9-10 year period to achieve that $180 million goal, the current surcharge is in excess of that, Representative Smith. So it wouldn't actually have to divert at all if they did it on the same basis. Now, they may decide, hey, we want to fill this up in 5 years. The PUC is requiring the bill to have hearings on the surcharge and the impacts and how they would structure this, but what it requires is that by a certain date that Oregon's contribution be done. So they could figure that out a number of ways based on testimony and how much they wanted to put in that on any given year.
Let me see if I can clarify. I don't know how much time we want to spend on this, but I think the question was about what we would not be getting if we dedicate this conservation charge, this public purpose charge, to Klamath Dam. So we get $180 million fund for Klamath Dam removal, but we don't get some other things. But that
correct
money is
well. The public purpose charge goes for a number of things. They're all designed to be done within the ratepayer district. So all the conservation efforts are within the district of PacifiCorp, or the public purpose charge that PGE customers pay are all within the service district of Portland General Electric, and those are all designed to reduce consumption, energy conservation, working towards renewables, all of which are embodied in the agreement in principle and the purpose for the removal of the Klamath dams. That power will be replaced, as you probably have heard in testimony, by new sources that meet the standards of the state. And so you're trading basically, Mr. Chair, one conservation goal you're prioritizing over another. And I believe this is a high priority, but I also believe that the ratepayers need to also have assurance that we are prioritizing and not continuing to put additional surcharges on when we have made a decision that this is really a critical one. And so you're trading one conservation, or at least a portion of one conservation effort, for another.
Representative,
I'll do two questions at a time. First, and maybe this is for the PUC to determine, but is it our best guess that they will evenly divide the costs among ratepayers, and they'll just a surcharge flat across their service area, or would there be some geographic preference or penalty? That's a question. And then second question, as we provide certainty for ratepayers,
many ratepayers, I would posit most of or all, are also taxpayers. If we provide certainty for ratepayers, does that, you know, subject taxpayers to greater upside risk? And do we have any sense of that upside risk?
Well, that's a very good question, and that was one of the many questions that led me to vote no in, on the Senate version of that. And you have an amendment, an agreement that was reached shortly after the bill passed the Senate to help, again, mitigate the potential effect on Oregon citizens. The Attorney General has issued an opinion, you may have that in your packet, saying that they believe the risk to the general taxpaying public is minimal. So I'll take the Attorney General on his word at that. But as you say, which eventually would be citizens of Oregon. So I will take the Attorney General's analysis on that basis.
And in terms of ratepayers, do we assume that the fees to ratepayers would be, the surcharge to ratepayers would be evenly divided, or would there be some geographic?
Well, the public purpose assessment is already determined. So it's just, it would not be changing that. The PUC would simply have to decide, you know, how much of that would go into this fund and how much of it would go into existing other conservation efforts.
Without the amendment, would it still be sort of geographically neutral, everybody pays, or we don't?
Again, the PUC under the bill will hold hearings on this to determine the rate structure, and they are empowered by law to see that any charges on ratepayers are fair, just, and reasonable. What I'm saying, this is fair, just, and reasonable to not double tax the ratepayers of PacifiCorp.
Thanks. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let's move on and hear from Scott Bolton, Andrea Kelly, Jeff Bissonnette. And if you you limit your comments, we'll save time for the follow-ups.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Bolton, Director of Government Affairs for PacifiCorp. Along with me today is Andrea Kelly, who is our Vice President of Regulation and also our Principal Negotiator for the agreement in principle. I'll be real quick. PacifiCorp serves Oregon, Washington, California's Pacific Power. We serve about 550,000 customers in Oregon and about 46,000 or so in our Northern California service territory. Senate Bill 76 is born out of recognition that many of the parties that were involved in our FERC relicensing process, and in particular the governments of Oregon, California, and federal agencies, oppose the issuance of a new license to operate the Klamath Hydroelectric Project. And without the support of the state and federal agencies that are permitting agencies and responsible for the mitigations associated with the new license, we simply find ourselves in a potential place of a costly limbo should this become a protracted, litigated process through the FERC process. So, seeing that opposition, seeing a more global and broader public interest issue developing with the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, the company recognized that there may be another path, a settlement path, that provided some certainty for our customers, some protections from costs that could be imposed on our customers, and that's really the genesis of Senate Bill of 76 and Oregon's contribution to the commitments that are laid out in the agreement in principle. Just real quickly, Senate Bill 76 is a rate cap. It's a cost cap bill. The legislation ensures that our customers' exposures to the costs and risks associated to potential dam removal is limited to our proportional share of the $200 million cap. So go back to the numbers I gave you of customer count. That means about 90% of our customers in the affected states are in Oregon. About 10% are in California, but they will each proportionally share their portion of the cost. So for Oregon, that means about $180 million would be the cost to our customers over a 10-year period. As Mr. Spain testified to, we believe for the average Oregon residential ratepayer, it's about $1.50 a month, on average about $18 a year, and $180 over the total 10-year period. Now, what do our customers get in return? We get low-cost certainty around the low-cost power coming out of the hydro project between now and 2020. We get a commitment to study the potential for dam removal, whether that's a good idea or not, whether the costs outweigh or don't outweigh the benefits. We get basically a timeout from what I think is a pretty protracted and volatile relicensing process right now, where we are very concerned about the ability to receive a license under the current policy positions that we're seeing from state and federal government. So at its most fundamental, this is a consumer protection bill. There's multiple protections built into this legislation. The first is the legislature's hard coding of the cost cap in the bill. The second is the PUC oversight of ordering this into rates. So it isn't take Pacific Corp's word for it, this is a good deal. PUC commissioners will also look at the elements and the decisions that went into the development of the agreement in principle and the final agreement and determine if that is indeed a good deal for Oregon customers of Pacific Power.
Scott, you can finish up or eat into Andrea's time.
Okay. So final word is whether you're for dam removal or against dam removal, hopefully we can all agree that protecting our customers should be something that's in all of our interests. That's what we believe this legislation does, and we urge your support for it. One last postscript to that is we do support the Dash 14 amendments, which do reflect agreement of a number of stakeholders, all of which are seeking to clarify what dam removal costs are and to limit the liability associated with eventual dam removal if that's the choice of the Secretary of Interior. Thank you.
Scott, we don't have a Dash 14.
I believe it's 13. I believe it's almost the exact same amendment as the Dash 13, but with a different place comma is what I believe, Mr. Graham.
That's the only difference. Just an apostrophe.
Okay. There's an apostrophe difference, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And
they're both good amendments.
Okay. And Mr. Carrier testified on the governor's support for the Dash 13s. That would carry over to the Dash 14s as well. All right? Just want to be clear. Thank you. Go ahead.
My name is Andrea Kelly, Vice President of Regulation, and I think we'll just be available for questions.
Thanks. Let's get to Mr. Bissonnette and then questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, representing residential ratepayers. As you've heard, Senate Bill 76 codifies an agreement between the governments of Oregon, California, tribes, PacifiCorps, and the U.S. government over the future of the Klamath River dams. CUP was not always a supporter of Senate Bill 76. We were concerned about the original language of the bill because it seemed like it would require the Public Utility Commission to put costs into rates without adequate review, and we felt that would establish an extremely dangerous precedent, and we asked for changes in the bill. We wanted to make sure that any decision to take any action around the Klamath dams received the same PUC review that any resource decision would receive. This means that the utility would have to defend any action it took with regard to the dams and demonstrate that the decision was prudent and in the best interest of ratepayers before those costs were allowed into rates. And the bill was changed to reflect that or to address that concern, and thus we felt we could support it. It's been stated a couple of times, but I think it's important to underscore that the removal of the dams or the non-removal of the dams will only happen after that PUC review, and it can only happen if it shows that the removal will actually benefit ratepayers at a lower cost than taking some other action, such as relicensing. And so the PUC process will go through a lot of modeling, a lot of economic analysis, and the decision will be made on what is in the best interest of ratepayers. Again, the language reflects that desire and reflects that push, and so we can support the bill. We also support the Dash 13s and apparently the Dash 14s as well as the as a good addition to the bill, basically clarifying the costs clarifying how dam removal costs are defined. And just a quick note on, I haven't seen the amendments that Senator Metzger just testified on. To be honest, though, from just first hearing, that it sounds like it's coming from a good place, but would not actually serve ratepayers very well, because We're talking about a resource decision in regard to the dams. We need to what the public purpose charge currently supports in terms of energy efficiency for homes and businesses, low-income weatherization, energy efficiency in schools. We need all of those things to continue because we need to make sure that our energy usage is going down so that as we figure out how to, if these dams are going to be taking out, we're going to need to figure out how to replace that power. And so bringing down our energy usage and making sure that investments continue in renewable energy will be a big part of the decision of what happens with the dams. So, again, I'd be happy to take a look at the specific amendments, but just on that first hearing, that would be my reaction.
Thanks, Chair. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bissonnette, what is the Citizens Utility Board? What is its purpose?
The Citizens Utility Board is a private, independent, nonprofit organization, but was created by Oregon voters in 1984 with the passage of Ballot Measure 3, and we exist as the official representative of residential ratepayers in the state based on that law that was created by voters. Most states have an entity like us that does the ratepayer representation. Most other states have that as a unit of local government, or I'm sorry, unit of state government, either as a unit of the Attorney General's office or within the PUC. We are structured a little bit differently because of that law, and we get no state funding. All of our money is from ratepayers, either through memberships or through an intervener funding mechanism provided at the PUC, which is supported by ratepayers.
Philip.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, by definition, then, from the will of the voters in the passage, the Citizens Utility Board would not be advocating for something that would have a long-term adverse impact on ratepayers?
That is always our intention, to figure out whatever ratepayers pay for. We don't decide in terms of we're not a low rates at all costs organization. The question we asked is whatever ratepayers are paying for, what is the value that they're getting for the money they're paying? And if they are getting value over the long term in terms of paying a little bit more to save energy down the road and thus saving money, we can't support increase in costs. So our goal is always to get value for the ratepayer and figuring out what is the best for the ratepayer in the long term.
Thanks. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was a remark, I think, made by Mr. Spain that the bill that we're looking at does not require the taking out of the dams or, for that matter, maybe authorize it. And a question, I guess, Scott, would be whether or not the company enjoys the power and authority to take out the dams if it chose to do so on its own motion, so to speak. And maybe that's what you're doing, and I just want to hear from you if you are being forced to take out the dams or if this is something you're doing by virtue of the company making a decision that it's in the best interest of the company.
Representative Benz, the decision is a business decision for the company. Absent the agreement in principle, we would not be agreeing to remove the dams, but because of the protections that we've been able to negotiate as part of the agreement, liability protection, as well as a cost cap for our customers, that is what ultimately allowed us to make the business decision that this was in the best interest of our customers.
So the point I guess I want to make is that you as a company have the power to take out the dams if you chose to do so. Is that a correct statement, or do you have to go to FERC and ask for permission to take out the dams?
We are under the jurisdiction of FERC, so we would have to file with FERC and request a surrender of our license, and then they would evaluate whether or not we could surrender our license.
And additionally, Representative Pence, we also are under several state regulatory bodies as well, PUCs or commissions. So we would very likely have to go to those commissions and get their support for removing a resource that's currently serving customers.
One final point. Does this bill that's before us today remove those requirements that you go through that permitting process? or will you still be required to go through those processes, assuming this bill passes?
We will still be required to go through the permitting processes, go through the NEPA, the National Environmental Protection processes. That will be done under an action of Congress rather than through the traditional FERC relicensing process. But that's the only difference. It will be undertaken in a way that complies with all of the state and federal permitting and requirements.
One final follow-up. Thank you. Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair. That my question really is, will the state of Oregon or any commissioner group have an opportunity to oppose the removal of the dams even though we pass this bill?
Yes.
And, and who is that?
The initial look will be done by the Public Utility Commission. Again, as the Citizens Utility Board testified, the first step after we have signed a final agreement is to file with the PUC and defend the company's decision to enter into this agreement as in the best interest of our customers. And the PUC will review that over a six-month period and reach a decision. If they reach a decision that it was not, then we go back to the drawing board.
Thank you.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If this passes and we move toward decommissioning and that actually happens, the dams are gone, is there a simple answer to how a utility, it was alluded to, but how a utility begins to replace the power?
Representative Gilliam, the power would be replaced through our current planning processes, and one of the advantages for customers is that we would have a certainty of a 10-year period to be able to identify replacement power. We have also entered into agreements with the state and federal government that we will look for public-private partnerships to replace the power through renewable resources down in the basin area.
Paul, thank you, Mr. Chair. As concerned as I am about power, and I know that's your business as a utility, I was impressed with Mr. Kandra's testimony, and I just wanted to hear from you all. I don't know if the word is assurance, but I'm concerned about the irrigators and about our farms everywhere in the state. So what is your can you fortify that in terms of your position of, if, and I know we're talking about the framework for how this all works out, but if the dams are decommissioned, do you concur with his assessment that our irrigation and our farmers are covered?
Well, there are two different agreements, the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, to which PacifiCorp is not a party, but we have included in the agreement in principle every element that touches PacifiCorp to facilitate the implementation of that agreement. So we will be looking at providing the mechanism for passing money from non-PacifiCorp sources back to irrigation customers on their bills, and be looking at ways to partner with them on renewable resource projects and buy the output of those projects for the benefit of our customers, but also as an offset to the costs that the irrigation community will see through their power bills.
Representative Jensen, and then we're going to have to move on. We have a number of folks who have come from some distance and still have not testified. So,
Representative Jensen. Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be very, very brief and quick with this. As I understand, you have the authority, PacifiCorp has the ability, to remove the dams with or without the passage of this particular Senate bill.
Representative Jensen, that's incorrect. We still have to go through.
I understand. In both cases, you have to go through something.
Correct.
But you have the ability to make that management decision to remove the dams. You may not be successful in that.
Correct.
But you have the. All right. In relationship.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In relationship to this, though, if we are to make the assumption that dams are something of a pain for utility companies right now in light of all of the things that go on around the country. It strikes me that with the passage of this, from the testimony I've been hearing, that this is a good management decision for you to support and go this route because it'll save you money. and remove some liability that might be there in the event that this legislation were not to pass. Is that correct?
That's correct. The framework of the agreement protects our customers through the cost cap. Absent the agreement, it would be very difficult for us to estimate the impact on our customers of moving down a dam removal path, and we would likely not move down that path without this agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Smith, one question. I know you're itching.
So who's left holding the bag? And I really need to answer this question. And the attorney and the reference to the Attorney General wrote an opinion and said there will be no bag to hold is not a good enough answer for me at this point, which is if we've minimized the up-cost risk to ratepayers through this bill, it didn't go away. So somebody, if you guys weren't going to do it because it might be really expensive, and you want to do it now because it won't be quite as expensive, because even if it turns out the sediment's going to be really terrible, right? But somebody's got to pay for that. So who pays for it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, there's a few bags in this agreement. So one bag is what we're talking about here with Senate Bill 76, which is how do we build a corpus towards through a surcharge mechanism to raise Oregon's contribution to the $450 million that's been agreed to for total dam removal costs. The other portion will be about $20 million or so that our California customers will also be paying, again, going back to the proportional share of the $200 million cost cap for Pacific Corp customers. The remaining $250 million is what was previously mentioned as the water bond that California has committed to. So California is committing both through customer dollars, through surcharge there in our service territory, as well as general taxpayer obligation for an additional $250 million, understanding that three of the dams actually reside in California and any perceived downstream benefits will also be enjoyed by the state of California. So those two states contribute the $450 million that's already been identified and committed through the agreement principle. Now, through the final agreement, through the studies, that will commence and conclude by 2012 for the Secretary of Interior's decision. If it's identified that dam removal will cost more than $450 million, then there's an opportunity for all parties, the federal government, states of Oregon and California, to take a time out and reconsider whether the costs outweigh the benefits of dam removal.
So then we just don't do it.
That could be the decision.
I may want to ask some questions to somebody else, but if you want to get somebody else.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lynn Brock and Tom Mallins and Mr. Pitts, of course. Yeah, Michael, you want to come on up as well? Why don't we start here?
Okay. I'm Lynn Brock. My husband and I have a farm in Bonanza, Oregon. It's a relatively small farm. I think some of our comments will sound like we're saying that the dam shouldn't be taken out. I know that's not what we're addressing today, but the fact that we think the dams should not be taken out would lead us to think that we don't want to pay to have the dams taken out. So my husband would like to state that as an off-project farmer, he was not invited to participate in the development of the proposed Klamath Agreement. In fact, those not part of the inner circle were denied participation. Although the water that he irrigates with doesn't come from the Klamath River, the removal of the Klamath River dams will adversely affect his ability to farm. The increased costs of all things and not just power The reduced availability of services will not only increase costs for him and others in the basin, but they'll also diminish his ability to remain in the basin. I turned in a copy of this, so you'll have that. I'm just going to hit on a few of his points. Both my husband and I have lived in Washington State along the coast on the west side of the mountains and in Oregon, and his parents were involved in commercial fishing up there, and he says there exists no reliable data to support the opinion that dam removal will improve fish populations. Contrary to this opinion is the fact that literally hundreds of miles of open rivers on the Oregon and Washington coast have essentially the same low returning fish populations as the Klamath River and no dams. Earlier this year, he and I both visited in New Mexico, and a place that we saw there was Brantley Lake. Brantley Lake is a new reservoir being filled after the removal of an upstream earthen dam. The sediment behind the dam, the old dam, was contained covered layers of DDT and other toxic chemicals. The New Mexico State Fish and Game have closed the fishery and expect it to stay closed for up to 10 years while the toxic chemicals unearthed in the old sediment are again covered downstream by additional sediment. My husband is deeply concerned with the wording of line number 2 of this bill in the summary, and declaring an emergency. There's no emergency, and similar to the urgency of the ill-conceived national stimulus package, appears to be an attempt to circumvent further discussion. More and more people understand just what the declaration of emergency and legislation means to them, and from what he hears, they don't like it. The Klamath Agreement was a product of a small number of special interest groups and too many in the basin. It's severely flawed. When we are denied our voice, concern grows and trust dissolves.
You would summarize the conclusion of your testimony.
I'll let that go. I would like to say on my own that a lot of your food comes from the Klamath Basin, and this is going to be devastating for farmers to have more costs passed on to them for power. But I would especially like to say that a lot of the people that are here speaking in this room today are people that were paid to come here for this purpose, to get this bill passed. The Klamath Basin farmers are at their paying jobs. They're driving their tractors, they're planting crops, they're irrigating and getting the irrigation system set up for this growing season. I think a hearing should be scheduled in the Klamath Basin to allow more participation in this process, which greatly affects the Klamath Basin residents and farmers.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members for allowing us to speak today. My name is Tom Malams. I am also a third-generation farmer in the Klamath Basin. I've been at my present location for over 30 years, been actively involved in these things for 30 years. It comes along with the territory. I'm president of the Klamath Off-Project Water Users Association, who our collective groups comprise approximately 125,000 irrigated acres in the basin, in the off-project area. Senate Bill 76, in our feeling, is that it eliminates the public process through the PUC. PUC has the authority to do everything that Senate Bill 76 does. Senate Bill 76 directs them to do that. It takes the public process out of it, in our view. If Senate Bill 76 all falls through, the KBRA falls through, the agreement principle all falls through, our feeling is, and this is what our attorney tells us as well, is that the adjudication process still goes forward. The way this is structured now in the off-project area, we come out short, very short. the KBRA, which is part of the agreement in principle and a dam removal bill, they're all intertwined enough to where if one fails, they all fail. The Klamath Tribe gets a time immemorial in-stream claim or is supported in this bill or in the entire KBRA process, which is more water than even exists in the basin. So in the upper basin, we would be out of business, very simply put. 125,000 acres of irrigated land would be out. I'm sorry I didn't... I have a set of petitions here... many people say that there's very little opposition in the Klamath Basin against this. That's very, very false. One of our own county commissioners, Al Schweitzer, even has admitted in a couple of meetings that his calls are approximately 10 to 1 against dam removal. This stack of papers here is 1,850 petitions signed by Klamath Basin individuals on the Klamath Basin, the river there, against dam removal, against the KBRA as it's written today. It's a good concept. It started out as a very good concept, but it got morphed into something completely different when Pacific Corps pulled out of the negotiations because it started going into water rights issues, land issues, all kinds of different things that it wasn't designed to do it originally. It kind of got off in a different direction to where our group has been essentially left out of the process. We're still there. We are one vote amongst 26. Our voice is not heard. It's not, we are, it's essentially walked over all the time. We would like you to look at the total scope of this. The $1.50 rates increases per month, that's with the dam removal costs, what they have proven to be, I hope you just look at the total cost.
Thank you. Will you be leaving either a copy of the petitions or the petitions themselves?
I'll leave you some of the... I didn't print up enough of these for everybody. Obviously, it would have...
I think even just to see the language... I mean, we've seen the number, but to see the language
in the
petition.
Yes,
so if you could leave a copy with members of the committees and we know what they were signing to.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman Chair and members of the House Environment and Water Committee. My name is Only Pat Jr. I'm here on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, substituting for Mr. Louis Pitt, who is ill today. I'm the past chairman of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. I'm a member of the Pacific Salmon Commission and the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. But I'm not speaking on their behalf today. I'm only speaking on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. I'm not here as an advocate of dam removal or for the record, I'd like to say that the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs right now is working with the Bonneville Power Administration, the Corps of Engineers, and with the... National Marine Fisheries in a 10-year agreement to try to restore salmon without dam removal as a focus. However, something I'd like to share. Warm Springs is a one-third owner of a very major hydroelectric project on the Deschutes River. Now, as was stated a little bit earlier, this is a business decision. It is not the continued operation of that dam or those dams will be decided based on whether or not it can be done economically. My understanding is that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has placed as a condition fish passage on those dams. Now, whether or not they can be retrofitted to accommodate that will be a decision that the Pacific Corps will have to make, and it'll be a bottom-line decision whether or not they can do it economically. Now, the Pelton Round Butte project in Central Oregon, of which the Warm Springs is a one-third owner, has decided to go forward with fish passage. We just recently had a major setback in that project, but the project will go on, and that's a multi-million-dollar project to move salmon downstream from the Crooked River, Deschutes River, and Metolius River, and into the lower Deschutes River. Chinook salmon, steelhead, and sockeye. So I come here as a proponent for salmon restoration, and I want to point out that there are many, many approaches to salmon restoration. Representative Jensen is very familiar with the Umatilla River Project, in which the Umatilla Tribe worked with irrigators in that basin to keep water in the river for salmon restoration. That has been a very successful effort. But finally, I'm going to read from a prepared statement to stay within my 3 minutes here.
And you're down to just the last sixth of that. We have about 30 seconds.
Okay, perfect. We have watched the Klamath people struggle with the loss of salmon and other fish that once were the foundation of their culture. We have seen them rise up and work tirelessly with their neighbors to weave a plan to restore a river that not long ago seemed beyond saving for salmon. The Klamath River was once a great cradle for the salmon. We look to the day when it will be again. Senate Bill 76A is a step toward returning salmon to Oregon without destroying agriculture. It is a product of long collaboration among the peoples of the Klamath Basin. Please reward their hard and caring work by supporting Senate Bill 76.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michael, do you have any comments?
Chair Cannon and members of the House Environment and Water Committee, for the record, my name is Michael Mason. I'm basically here to point out that I'm available for any questions regarding why the Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs is supporting this project. Obviously, as Mr. Pat has mentioned, Commissioner Pat, I should say, has mentioned, the tribes at Warm Springs have taken a different approach. But the Klamath dams don't seem to allow this approach. Now, the amount spent for the Pelton Round Butte project to date is about $102 million. It's going to go up. It's going to be at least $110 million to make sure there's fish passage to the sea, again, after 60 years of blockage by the Pelton Round Butte project. But the numbers we've heard from FERC and Pacific Corps were much, much higher than that, far, far higher than that, to try to do that for the Klamath Dam. So thank you, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. Any brief questions for any members? Representative Smith.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll leave to you who you think is the best suited to answer this question, but I still have a real question about, and it seems like I've heard conflicting things, the impact on irrigated agriculture of the dam removal plan and of this overall. And I've heard that we got to have this for agriculture and for planning in the future, and that if we do this, it'd be terrible for it. And I may not have been listening well enough, but I'm still confused on that point. And I don't know if there's somebody here who can answer.
Two irrigators here an opportunity to give their perspective, and then I'm sure there are others who may have a different view of it. But from your point of view, do you want to? Okay.
One brief comment I'd like to make is we're members of Horsefly Irrigation District. Horsefly is one of the few districts that has to double pump. Our water first has to be pumped out of the river into the ditches, and that cost is spread to all of the people that are part of Horsefly Irrigation District, and then the individual farmer has to pay to pump it out of the ditch to run it through his wheel line. So we're going to be paying any of those costs twice for the amount of water that we pump. Okay, another thing is we have a drought year well. It pumps 3 million gallons a day if we have to use it. That irrigates just our small farm and the neighbors down the road. That's about 300 acres probably for the two of us together on our crop part of our land. Okay, how much is that going to cost us if we had to run that, if Horsefly couldn't deliver to us and we had to pump from 40 to 60 feet deep 3 million gallons a day?
Thank you.
I think I can address part of your question. There was the difference between the project irrigators and the off-project irrigators. We have different geographic setting, they are under a federal reclamation project. So they are handled a little differently than we are in the off-project area. This agreement favors the project irrigators. I don't blame them for some of the tact that they're using. The only difference we have is they feel that they are guaranteed a block of water in the KBRA, which is tied to the dam removal bill. But in reality, that block of water that they think they're going to be guaranteed, that is essentially off-project water that is lost through the KBRA process granting the tribal in-stream claim, because that in-stream claim could never be met if we continue to irrigate. We have flow charts that shows in the last 74 or 76 years, using that tribal in-stream claim that is supported in the KBRA tied to the dam removal, we would have been able to irrigate, I think it's six seasons out of the last 74-75 years. You can't, agriculture can't survive irrigating once every 10 years. Can't do it.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
We have five more folks signed up to testify by my list, and I'll bring them up in a three and a two and ask them to keep it brief. So let's start Stephen Cafori, Tom Wolf, and James Honey. And members, we're likely to be here for about another 15 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here today with the Trust for Public Land. You've heard a lot about this agreement. This bill is a narrow bill, but if it passes, it opens us this wide agreement. Part of that agreement is a portion of that we're working on, the Trust for Public Land, which will bring 95,000 acres of land, forest land, into the Klamath tribes. It will not happen unless this bill passes as part of the agreement. We were part of a large group of folks who brought this together. I've never seen a more mixed group of stakeholders all supporting the bill. And I just want to say that time is of the essence. In order for all these pieces to come together, this bill has to move quickly. And I appreciate the chair's putting this early on his agenda. Thank you for doing that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Tom.
Chair Cannon, committee members, I have prepared testimony that is a lovely piece of prose that I hope you get a chance to read, but I will not read from that in consideration of time. I just want to mention three things. Number one, I am not paid to be down here. I'm down here purely volunteer. So number two, I was once told by several members of a federal...
Tom, I think you need to identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Tom Wolf, Chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. And I was once told by an administrator with a federal fish agency that the most effective way to recover fish populations in a river where there are dams is removing those dams wherever possible. And I've since had that backed up in many studies and many agencies that I've said. Three, the irrigators in Klamath Basin are not affected one jot by the removal of the dams as far as I could tell. And also, lastly, TU has been an active supporter in this process. We have been representative from the get-go, and we feel that this is the best way to deal with the status quo, and we believe that recovery cannot occur without dam removal, and dam removal is likely to occur without Senate Bill 76, and we urge you to support it and pass it through your committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Cannon and members of the committee, my name is James Honey. I work with Sustainable Northwest, a Portland-based conservation organization that works through economic development, or an economic development organization that uses conservation to achieve its objectives. I've worked in the Klamath Basin almost exclusively in the Upper Basin for the past 8 years. And let you go on my beautiful prose. I'm going to bring up three issues that were addressed earlier in the day that have to do with the question of practicality and what's before you in SB 76. The first is all of the folks who argue against dam removal based on cost issues are doing so under the assumption that there's a no-action alternative, that everything could stay the same just the way it is today. No matter what happens, those dams are going to be relicensed and people are going to be paying more. There's a cost cap under this bill that allows us to control that, as opposed to go into another scenario where we have potentially far greater costs no matter where we end up. So, you know, the 1,800 signatures in the basin, I understand that. One can be against dam removal, but you've got to ask, there is no alternative where your costs don't go up today. This is the cost control measure that we have before us. Second issue that's purely practical and has to do with the sediment issues. Chair, I will submit a memo prepared by a colleague at American Rivers about the CDM memo. We are prepared to argue, one, that there are much more recent studies that indicate that sediment can be managed by the river and that the toxics are not as dire, if you will, as people suggest. But again, let me go to the practical. Don't believe me and don't believe the science of the day. Let's believe a thorough analysis that the Secretary of Interior is going to carry out. And then we have a couple of other insurance systems that make it so that it is not your decision today to evaluate science and cost. It's simply your decision to build a trust fund. One, you have the Secretary's determination. Then we've got NEPA. California has CEQA. We've got the Clean Water Act. These are all tried and tested methods to do these sorts of analyses. It's not incumbent on the committee to try to make those decisions. So, again, looking at practicality. The third piece is, and I'm sorry Representative Bentz isn't here, to talk about what happens if this broader restoration agreement doesn't happen. One, this dam removal bill is important to move that broader restoration agreement. And I think the basin under a no alternative with the restoration agreement is not a good place. Look back to 2001, look back to 2002, and that's what you're going to see on a moving forward basis. That is what has brought the tribes, the conservation community, and agriculture together. Let's talk about adjudication. We'd see uncertainty over several levels of litigation over the next 20 years as to who owns actually how much water. When that decision is made, and if it were a decision that favored the tribes, we would see that be administered in such a way water would be reallocated with no help or assistance to those who are junior to the tribe's claim. That's a tremendous economic impact. That's just adjudication. Right now, the basin is managed on biological opinions that look very narrowly at the basin. You can ask Steve Kandra on a year-to-year basis. He doesn't know whether he's going to have water to irrigate with. I think this year he found out about 30 days ago the basin restoration agreement allows us to get into much more security on issues like that. So I think we know what the basin is like. If it doesn't work, it's water shutoffs. It's salmon die-offs. That's why we're moving forward. Thank you, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
James, quickly, you know this issue very well, and I want to get back at something that Representative Smith, I think, was trying to get at. Let's say that we head down this path. We pass Senate Bill 76 into law. It enables a final agreement that's based on an agreement in principle that says we expect that we're not going to need to spend more than about $450 million on dam removal. But let's say we start down that dam removal path and the costs of dam removal exceed by a lot $450 million that we've estimated and sort of banked on between Oregon's fund and California's fund. What then happens? Who then pays when it's, as Representative Girard suggested, $4.5 billion?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is don't do anything until you've studied the darn thing carefully. Mm-hmm. The studies that are out are preliminary. Whether they're the California Coastal Conservancy's studies or the CDM study, which frankly was leaked and Department of Interior wanted to keep back because it had such major flaws in it, don't make decisions based on preliminary studies. Make decisions on in-depth studies. Why do you think the Secretary of Interior, both under the Bush administration and the Obama administration, wants to look at this in more detail? So one, get a lot smarter before you start yanking concrete out of the system. Let me go into, okay, we did our studies and we proved ourselves to be very wrong, if you will, in our estimates. Going back to the work that DOJ attorneys did in the letter that was prepared for Senator Dingfelder, there's nothing in law that would appear to connect Oregon to those, we'll call it cost overruns. In the end here, this is really a federally licensed project that the feds are going to be making a major decision about and proposing to do federal legislation on. The last major agency action is a federal action. I would say you would look, and again, this is why the Secretary of Interior is being so careful, But that ultimately is much more closely related to the feds than the two states.
Okay, so my takeaway is perhaps some legal ambiguity, but in your best estimation, probably U.S. taxpayers via the federal government.
And again, we want to avoid that. And I'd go back to Paul's memo to say,
yeah, and I haven't seen that
looks,
memo.
Looks like. We can argue there is nothing, you know, in law, statute, or practice that would connect Oregon to that kind of cost overrun.
Okay. Appreciate that. Representative Smith.
Unless there's a bunch of crap in Oregon that we've got to clean up and the feds don't want it, but we don't want the crap in our backyard. Right?
Nothing
in the habit that says they've got a piece of crap pick up the back of my yard, but I might want to do it because it's a piece of crap in the back of my yard. I mean, is there something that requires the feds to do it if there is a piece of something in the back of my yard?
What we have is a structured process in which we analyze what's in there. Our preliminary studies tell us that there isn't a lot in our backyard, but we've got to go confirm that. And when it happens, frankly, these are federally licensed dams in a federally managed river. It is, in my view, reasonable and appropriate that the feds are taking a very hard look at this because of those nexus.
Thanks.
Follow up. It's a different point.
Different point, different language.
Yeah.
The
I'm a school teacher.
Yeah, and I appreciate that very much. I can use it. I think I heard you say words to the effect of don't act without good studies. My fear is that maybe that's what we're being asked to do now. And unless the answer to the following question is yes, with some certainty, do we have another chance, we the legislature, have another chance, if we act to approve this bill, to look in any meaningful way at this agreement?
Well, you can, Chair and members of the committee, you can certainly look at the agreement when it becomes a final agreement. The legislature can act in multiple ways. That's your discretion. I would simply say what we have is a structured process to analyze the issue. It will give us a lot more data, and then we have a number of different tests that go through before a decision to address concrete comes into play.
So follow up, I'll dance with you. The in that structured process, does the legislature look at it again, or is this our chance unless we do some extraordinary measure to force ourselves upon the process?
As I understand it, and again, the final agreement negotiations are confidential, but I think I can tell you that there is no formal process in the in what is being contemplated today that would have the legislature intervening.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you all. And our... Let's hear, lastly, Andrea Raver, Robbie, and Gail Whitson. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Andrea Robbie.
I was close.
It's close. It's good. Thank you. I have a couple things that I'd like to say, and then I'd like to address some of Representative Smith's questions. Hopefully, maybe I can answer some of them a little better. I am the chair of the Natural Resource Advisory Council. We are an advisory council to the Board of Klamath County Commissioners. We voted to not support the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement because of concerns regarding dam removal, because of concerns regarding irrigation supplies, and concerns regarding equal access to affordable power and equal protections for the Endangered Species Act. We didn't vote against the concept. We voted against the concept as it's proposed. I am also an irrigator. We have ranches in the off-project area, so we are not part of the federally the federal project. We fall outside of that. We irrigate directly from the Sprague River. We are also a contestant in the Klamath adjudication case. I'm a member of the board for the Resource Conservancy. The Resource Conservancy represents 63 of the 65 off-project irrigators. We did not have a seat at the table to discuss and to negotiate what was going to happen with our water and how our adjudication claims were going to be settled. We formally petitioned, and we were formally denied a seat at that table. To this date, we're not privileged to any of that information because of the confidentiality. We see it after the fact, after everyone's negotiated, at the same time that you guys are seeing it. Yet, that is specifically supposed to settle our adjudication claims. To me, that's the same thing as if I'm getting divorced with my husband, and my husband's negotiating with the neighbors on what's going to happen with my kids. If you're going to have a settlement agreement, it needs to be between the two parties that have the dispute. If I, as an off-project water user, have a dispute with the Klamath tribes over water, we're the two parties that need to be discussing that and settling that. And that's not provided for in the current Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. It says that, 18 months after everyone agrees and signs on, then we'll figure out what to do. Well, I don't know about you, but once the carrot has already been given, you're no longer dangling it in front of somebody to have them come to the table and negotiate in a good faith effort. So in terms of the actual dam removal that we're looking at, though, and the costs associated with that within Senate Bill 76, I have some concerns. I'm an irrigator. We're making it in terms of our ranch being productive, but having continual costs, I'm very concerned. We can't afford it. We're going to get to a point that agriculture is not going to be able to afford it. And then where are we going to provide our food in the United States? To answer your question on who's holding that bag, I don't know. It's a question I've asked. Right now, you guys are being asked to support a bill that would turn around and have me hold part of that bag as a ratepayer. Then secondarily, what happens if the Oregon taxpayers get stuck with it? Then I get to pay for it twice, as a ratepayer and then as an Oregon taxpayer? I don't know, and we've never gotten a satisfactory answer on who's holding that bag at the end of the day.
Please finish your testimony. Thank you.
And the last thing that I wanted to say, too, in terms of that settlement on the adjudication, is that to be able to sign on to a deal as this is the first step of a dam removal process as part of a climate-based adjudication settlement, it needs to have all the pieces together. So we need to wait until we have the studies done, until we have all those pieces in place and all the players at the table before we start the ball rolling and take that first step. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chair Cannon and members of the committee, my name is Gail Whitsitt. I'm the wife and aide of Senator Doug Whitsitt, and more importantly, probably, I'm a geologist. I answer the telephone and mail regarding Senate Bill 76 and dam removal for our district and Klamath County, and it's running 10-1 against both of these things. Our office has been presented with the 1,850 signed, dated, and address petitions. I have written testimony, which I'll give to you. A summary follows. An Interior Department scientific report surfaced the day after SB 76 passed out of the Senate committee, which stated that issues related to dam removal rated high liability. These issues included sediment removal behind the dams and flooding below the dams. The CDM report, which in my opinion as a professional geologist was a good report, and one of the most recent assessments on dam removal, also says the previous reports delineating costs for sediment removal and other factors were incorrect in estimating potential costs. The costs are estimated to be much greater by hundreds of millions of dollars. The CDM report estimates a low end of $463 million and a high end of $800+ million. A 2007 Federal Energy Regulatory Commission report on the dams also states that potential costs to remove the sediment ranges upwards to $4.5 billion in a worst-case scenario, and I have yet to see a government project that ever went on the low end of any given estimate. If that scenario exists, that would be a cost of $8,000 for each Pacific Corps ratepayer to pick up the difference if it doesn't go on to the taxpayers. The CDM and FERC reports state that increases in greenhouse gases will range in the tens of thousands of metric tons per year to 111,100 metric tons, and the cost cannot be currently translated into dollar figures from the loss of this clean hydro-generated electricity. Pacific Corps will have to use coal-generated electricity in the interim to make up for the lost power if the dams are to be destroyed. This replacement energy will cost ratepayers even more money, estimated at $35 million per year in today's dollars. In conclusion, why was the CDM report held back from the public and members of the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources until the day after SB 76 passed out of committee? Oregon's Department of Justice had the report, this report that was contrary to dam removal, well before the committee hearing. Why was it held back? And finally, why would Oregon's governor and legislative body allow for thousands of tons of additional carbon emissions to be placed into our state's skies and environment when they are working so hard on a daily basis to reduce carbon emissions from every other source this session? And I have one last thing to say. The AG's letter that was referred to by Senator Metzger and read by Senator Dingfelter on the Senate floor was noted not to be a legally binding opinion in fine print on the bottom of the first page. Ben Unger of the Attorney General's office will confirm that Senator Whitsitt had a meeting, and this is not a legally binding document when he tells you these aren't related.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. And here's...
I just have a final comment, and thank you both for your testimony. I have a lot of questions and probably a lot of comments, too, but I guess two that stand out. For proponents, I'm still lacking some clarity on this sort of who's holding the bag question, these cost overruns. The AG's letter may or may not be helpful in that regard. I haven't seen it. For opponents, I hear concerns about the cost of dam removal. But I don't hear concerns about the cost of dam relicensing. And if we're to believe Pacific Corp, The whole point here is to avoid the greater costs, or at least insulate ourselves via this PUC mechanism from the greater costs that we would be exposed to under dam relicensing and all the trouble and time and cost and potential mitigation measures required that way. So I would want to just leave it at that. I'll be hearing, I'm sure, from folks, and please feel free to follow up with any member of the committee. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 76 and close the Committee on Environment and Water. Thank you, members, for staying late.
One quick question to ask, Mike.
Mrs. Witt.